Welcome to the Florida Roundup, and thanks for listening this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. My co-host Tom Hudson is off today. Well, Florida is once again at the epicenter of the COVID pandemic. Over the past week, COVID-19 infections have surged here in the Sunshine State. We now account, in fact, for about 1 in 5 new cases. At the same time, worryingly, the vaccination rate against the disease has begun to level off. And the more contagious Delta variant of the virus is burning its way through the state. Virtually every patient now filling up Florida hospitals and ICUs needing emergency COVID care is unvaccinated. Now, a little later in the show, we'll take a closer look at the state's response to this latest surge of the virus and the politics around that. But first, this hour on the Florida Roundup, we're going to check in with healthcare professionals to get a sense of how hospitals and doctors and nurses are dealing with COVID and their level of concern. Chad Nielsen is Director of Accreditation and Infection Prevention at UF Health Jacksonville, an epicenter of the virus. Chad, good to speak with you.
Hi, nice to be on with you, Melissa.
Good to have you. Also joining the Florida Roundup, Dr. Bernard Ashby. He's a cardiologist in Miami and the Florida State Lead for the Committee to Protect Healthcare, a national group striving to achieve equitable healthcare in America. Dr. Ashby, good to have you on the show. We'll have to get Dr. Ashby connected here shortly, but we want to hear from you, Florida. Let us know your concerns about this latest surge of coronavirus. Call us wherever you are in the state, 305-995-1800, or tweet us at Florida Roundup. Chad Nielsen, let's begin with you. Florida is seeing a dramatic spike, as I mentioned, in COVID cases, particularly in Northeast Florida. You're at UF Health Jacksonville, where you've been overwhelmed, as so many other hospitals have in Duval and surrounding counties. What are you seeing right now in your hospital, and what are you hearing from your colleagues around the state?
Well, we are certainly an epicenter right now in the state of Florida, Melissa. We've seen a triple in the number of COVID-19 admissions into our two hospitals here in Jacksonville. We have far surpassed our previous high of COVID admissions, which we experienced in the winter surge in January. We zoomed past that earlier this week without stopping. So, cases are pouring into our hospital, our staff are getting tired, and we're starting to get information from around the state, Tampa, Orlando, Miami, that other hospitals are starting to experience the same thing.
And the statistics that we've seen, Chad, indicate that virtually every patient coming in now needing help, needing oxygen, or needing to be intubated is an unvaccinated patient. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. Of our 148 cases that we have in our two hospitals right now in Jacksonville, over 95% of those patients are unvaccinated. The remaining 5% are vaccinated or are partially, but they also have other comorbidities. And largely what we've seen is all COVID-19 deaths since June in our hospital have been unvaccinated patients.
It's so frustrating to hear that, Dr. Ashby. Given that the vaccine is free and widely available, we've only got about half the state vaccinated. And so you and other doctors have been raising the alarm about this through the Committee to Protect Healthcare. What are your biggest concerns right now as hospitals are really cracking under the strain of this latest surge?
Hello, just want to make sure that you can hear me.
Yes, clear. We sure can. Go right ahead.
Okay, excellent. So yesterday, myself and my colleagues, as part of the Committee to Protect Healthcare, had a press conference to essentially express our concerns, but really speak on behalf of healthcare professionals statewide. There's been a longstanding precedent with regards to how medical professionals interact with politicians, in which there was usually a decorum of respect and communication, open communication. But since the pandemic has started, it has essentially been a one-sided deal in which we are not really respected in terms of policy decisions, especially when politics are involved. And we just want to focus on the research, the data, and make good, sound policy so that, essentially, just to simplify it, less people will get harmed or die. And what our purpose was of that call the press conference yesterday was essentially to encourage Governor DeSantis and encourage other policymakers and municipality leaders to let's start being proactive in our planning. Let's not be reactive. Yes, we have vaccines. Yes, we're making them more widely available, but that just cannot be your only avenue of trying to deal with this pandemic. You have to make it comprehensive. And I just want to make one last point. We, at no point did we advocate or say that we wanted lockdowns or any particular restrictions. And Governor DeSantis responded to us saying that somehow we insinuating that we said that. And that's not at all what we're saying. We're just saying that we want, proactive, aggressive policy so that people can live their lives. And it's unfortunate that this has gotten politicized because it really doesn't have to be. I think we're all on the same page when we say we want Florida to succeed economically and in every aspect. But at its foundation, we want to protect people's lives and livelihoods.
The governor did call for increased vaccinations earlier this week. At the same time, though, he downplayed this surge of the virus. He called it a seasonal pattern. Here's the governor pointing out that the vast majority of new infections are found among unvaccinated Florida residents.
If you are vaccinated, though, the number of people that end up hospitalized after is almost zero. It's incredibly, incredibly low.
Okay, so Dr. Ashby, the governor's office will point out that he has pushed vaccinations in Florida, particularly among senior citizens. Let's face it, doctor, most senior citizens in Florida have gotten the vaccine. The big problem now is people 50 and younger, isn't it, who are getting sick and needing intensive care. Doctor.
Oh, I agree. That is true. The vast majority of deaths are in the senior citizen population with regards to the COVID-19 pandemic. And, the vast majority of the vaccinations have been in that particular population. And now what you're seeing is that the age distribution has shifted downward as the vaccinations has rolled out. And, unfortunately, the younger population is hesitant. Now, I would like to commend the governor on advocating for the vaccine. I wish that he would have done it earlier. When he got his own vaccine, he did not announce it. We found out after some reporters reached out to him. And that's just kind of an example of the politics that are being played.
And by that you mean mixed messaging coming out of the governor's office? On the one hand, getting vaccinated. On the other hand, not doing it publicly. On the one hand, urging seniors to get vaccinated. On the other hand, selling anti-Fauci merchandise, that kind
exactly.
of thing.
Yes. Exactly. And that's politics right there. And it's not helpful when we're talking about messaging. Again, we all agree that vaccinations are safe and effective. And our best tool, or I should say weapon, because I feel like we're fighting a war against this pandemic, against this, against the SARS-CoV-2 virus. And the mixed messaging and the politics are really having an effect on people's ability to discern what's real information versus agenda-driven information.
What about that?
And just one last point.
Yeah, go ahead. Mm-hmm. Yeah, one last point. Go ahead.
Yeah, just one last point. The media in particular, unbeknownst to them, I think they're contributing to the confusion, because essentially what a lot of the media is describing as COVID-19 infections is, we have to be clear that it's SARS-CoV-2 virus positive tests, right? Infections. And so just because you test positive for SARS-CoV-2 virus or COVID-2 virus doesn't necessarily mean that you go on to develop the COVID-19 disease. We're referring to everything as COVID-19. So a lot of folks who hear that vaccinated people test positive for COVID-19 are getting the wrong idea. The vaccine is not a force field, doesn't create a force field. So if you have the vaccination and you have vaccine immunity, you can test positive. Whether or not you go on to develop symptoms is a different story.
Sure.
So I think we need to be very clear on how we communicate this, because it's also contributing to the confusion and
the confusion,
but, and the disinformation that's being propagated.
Chad Nielsen, UF Health Jacksonville. Let me just say, for the record, on this program, we've tried to be very clear from the outset that even if you are fully vaccinated, you still can test positive for COVID, as Dr. Ashby said. We've also tried to be clear that you are far less likely to have a serious illness, to be hospitalized, or to die if you're vaccinated. And so it's critical, Chad Nielsen, to increase vaccination rates in this state. The problem is there are large segments of the population who, for a number of reasons, don't want to get the vaccine. What's your message to those people, Chad?
Yeah, my message to them is put politics aside, put social media aside, conspiracy theories, all of these other reasons that people have for not getting vaccinated, put them all aside and look around. Listen to our healthcare providers, listen to our public health officials who are banging the drum right now saying we have a serious issue on our hand. It's already too late to get vaccinated to affect my hospital numbers today. But if we want these numbers to start coming down, we need the public who are unvaccinated to do one of two things, and ideally both: get vaccinated now and start masking in public again, because that's the only way we're going to see any effects in our hospital numbers decreasing here over the next few weeks.
It's 305-995-1800. We're live across the state here on the Florida Roundup this Friday, as Florida is an epicenter for resurgent cases of coronavirus. Mary is in Largo, Florida. Hi, Mary. Thanks for calling in. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'll make it brief. I tend to talk a little too much. So I'll just say
no
that,
problem.
I mean, this is ridiculous to make this political. It's not political. It's a virus. I totally agree with everything I'm hearing. I called in late, so I don't know the names of the gentlemen, but I agree with everything they're saying. I work with the general public as a case manager. I take care of families, children that have no families. I had COVID. I recovered with no problem, thank God, or whatever people believe in.
Glad to hear it.
I started masking as soon as I saw the Delta variant taken off again. Now I understand Lambda or something's behind it.
Yeah.
So I had COVID. I got vaccinated. I mask. I use hand sanitizer. I wish people would just drop the politics and pick up manners. Think about other people's parents, other people's grandparents, children. Try not to get other people sick and take care of yourself, too. It's not political. And that's really all I have to say about it.
Mary, thank you so much. Dr. Bernard Ashby, you're the lead of Committee to Protect Healthcare. You know, you hear the frustration from folks out there. They're so weary of this and they're so frustrated. And they're trying to appeal almost to people's sense of community or people's sense of shame in urging them to get vaccinated. I'm not sure how effective it is at the moment, but what are some messages that you think might work to convince people to put ideology aside and focus on the community's health and the state's health?
Well, I would like to echo that caller's point. I could hear her frustration as well, and she probably sees firsthand in her position in social work. And unfortunately, a lot of folks on the front line dealing with patients, we have a perspective that is incredibly saddening at times when you see folks who are dying or suffering necessarily. So I'd like to start with that. But in terms of the messaging, I think it's very important to listen to folks who describe why they're not getting the vaccine. I think that's very important, because I don't think we're doing nearly enough of that. And one of the messages or the issues that I hear often is that there's just a distrust of the government. There's a distrust of healthcare, and the individuals who are propagating misinformation or disinformation are capitalizing on that, meaning that they're speaking to those actually sometimes, a lot of times, rational distrust of institutions, particularly if you're African-American. We're always bringing up the Tuskegee experiment, and yeah, that's great, but those things are happening right now. And And the proof is in the pudding. I mean, look at all the outcomes across the board, whether it be life expectancy, heart disease, cardiologist, cancer care, infections like HIV, vaccination rates. I mean, there's always been, a disparity there. And now that we're dropping this pandemic, on top of that, nothing has changed. So this is not new. And so I think it's important to, one, acknowledge that and speak to it. But then it's also important to, develop a rapport. And that's hard to do in the midst of a pandemic. But it's also, this is the time, because we need to have a reckoning with our healthcare system, because essentially it's failing a large swath of people. And at some point, we have to understand that if our healthcare system is not designed to actually serve the individuals in the communities and not just make money, we're going to deal with another issue in the future that's going to cause, these mass casualties.
Yes.
And we're already having mass casualties right now.
We're already having them. And not to cut you off, Dr. Ashby, just want to get at least one more caller on before we have to wrap you both up.
Okay.
Alyssa in Tallahassee. Alyssa, you're on the Florida Roundup.
Yes, hi. I'm a substitute teacher for many years and have also been a full-time teacher, was hoping to return to full-time teaching this year. And I'm frightened. I've been watching my school board meetings in Leon County, where Rocky Hanna is our superintendent, and he is just acting as though nothing has changed. They're going to have everyone return to schools with masks optional. They're not planning on having a dashboard, which is keeping like a weekly count of the number of COVID cases. It's like there's this incredible denial, and all of us are being put at risk, and I'm frightened. I don't even think I'm going to return to school at this point.
I'm sorry to hear that, Alyssa. Chad Nielsen, quickly before we say goodbye, what about this? Because the governor says he'll fight any federal attempt to call for a mask mandate in schools when kids go back in a couple of weeks.
Well, I certainly seem to remember last year they said we weren't going to mask our schools, and then it happened. Obviously, everybody knows the risks that COVID carries, particularly in unmasked individuals. And most of these children going back to schools are not of an age to get vaccinated against the virus yet. So we've been recommending, at least to our local area, that if you have kids and you think they'll wear a mask in school, we recommend you try and get them to wear a mask under the age of 12 if they're unvaccinated. And unfortunately, a lot of parents are having to make these decisions. And she, as a teacher, was living through this in January and understands. So we certainly need our school boards locally and at the state level to really look at this moving forward. Because if we don't increase vaccination rates against our eligible population right now, we could be looking at a very dark school year in just a matter of weeks.
I want to thank you both for your insights. Chad Nielsen, Director of Accreditation and Infection Prevention at UF Health Jacksonville. Dr. Bernard Ashby, cardiologist in Miami and Florida State Lead for the National Group Committee to Protect Healthcare. Thank you both so much.
Yeah, thank you, Melissa.
And still to come, the governor is facing criticism for his handling of the pandemic, but he says his approach makes sense. We'll take a closer look next here on the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Back in a moment. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. My co-host Tom Hudson is off today. Well, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis said this week that he will not consider another lockdown of the state due to the coronavirus.
You're not getting that done in Florida. I'm going to protect people's livelihoods. I'm going to protect kids' right to go to school. I'm going to protect people's right to run their small businesses.
Now, DeSantis has drawn national attention and praise from conservatives for bucking federal health care officials over his decisions here in Florida around the pandemic. Everything from keeping kids in brick-and-mortar schools to keeping the beaches open, overruling city leadership on mask orders and other things. Despite all of this, a group of Florida physicians says the governor's push to reopen the state early and block some of these precautions, they believe, are a main reason for a sharp increase in the number of Florida residents who've suffered from COVID-19. The politics of this pandemic is what we're talking about now here on the Florida Roundup. Give us a call wherever you happen to be in the state, 305-995-1800. Tweet us at Florida Roundup. In a moment, we're going to go to Gary Fineout, a reporter for Politico. He'll join us because he's been covering the governor's administration. And we did hear earlier in the show from Bernard Ashby, a Miami cardiologist and leader of the Florida chapter of the Committee to Protect Healthcare. Ashby bemoaned the politicization of this whole ordeal. He said he would like to see the governor talk more and earlier about the efficacy of vaccines and less time attacking federal infectious disease expert Anthony Fauci in hopes of scoring political points, he said. Let's go now to Gary Fineout. We still don't have Gary Fineout, so as we try to get him connected, give us a call at 305-995-1800. Hey, Gary, how are you?
I'm sorry about that. That was my bad. I was trying to stay unmuted.
Yeah, no problem. The perils of Zoom. It's good to hear your voice, and it's good to have your insights. So let me ask you
about that.
Yeah, no problem. Let me ask you about this. The governor is a superstar among Republicans nationally. He's seen as a front runner should he run for president in 2024. At the same time, he's facing increasing pressure here on the home front with this latest surge of the virus and the fact that we are an epicenter nationally. Our hospitals are overwhelmed. Spokespeople for DeSantis say he's handling the pandemic great. But he is facing some heat about this. So how do you see this playing out for the governor and for the state?
Well, I mean, the way I see it playing out is, I mean, I think it's just going to depend on the numbers and where things go. And, you know, the governor's already made a prediction. He made a prediction earlier this week. He has, even though there are people in the medical community who disagree with his assertion that this is, quote, seasonal, he has made the proclamation that he thinks it's going to go down in August. Watching this whole thing play out over the last 16 months, I mean, it's clear that he has made several calculated decisions in regards to how to deal with the pandemic. And he kind of went ahead and did it his way, even though he got a lot of flack about it. And, you know, a perfect example is he just, even though there was people inside his inner circle who wanted him to do a mask mandate, he never would do one. And he would, you know, I think Florida is one of the few states that, you know, because there were other Republican governors, even those in the Southeast, who had a mask mandate. So he clearly has his own course of action. A lot of people do research and try to figure out all this stuff. DeSantis spends apparently a lot of time looking at research. When I was in his office, you know, this is like close to a year ago, his total desk was littered with reports about COVID. So. But the question is it the right approach? Who is the right approach? Is it, you see other states that have been had much more stricter restrictions, and in some instances their death rate wasn't as high. But, you know, the rejoinder from the DeSantis administration is like, well, but we focused on seniors, and if you look at the mortality rate among seniors, it's very low compared to other states. Hmm. I think the only thing I was going to add is, you know, I think at this point in time, I see no indications that he's going to change his approach. And he has shown throughout this entire period of time that the criticism of Democrats is not going to sway him. And in fact, in most instances, the Democrats would ask questions and they would send him letters and have press conferences. And he just, you know, he didn't respond. He ignored them.
In fact, he has doubled down. The other day, the governor said he would call for a special legislative session if the federal government calls again for a mask mandate in schools. When children in Florida
really
school, here's the governor.
Is it really comfortable? Is it really healthy for them to be muzzled and have their breathing obstructed all day long in school? I don't think it is.
We heard just a few minutes ago, Gary, on the show from a teacher in Tallahassee calling in and expressing her worry and concern. We've heard from a lot of parents, particularly parents of children younger than 12. They are still too young to be vaccinated, and they're concerned about sending their kids back to school in a few weeks as the pandemic is raging, when their children aren't eligible to get the shot and most kids won't be masked. This is likely to get more intense over the next week or two. You know, suburban parents, that's not really a political demographic you want to anger. What about this?
Well, yeah, I mean, that is a good point. I mean, but once again, we can go back, we can play back what happened last summer heading into last school year. If you remember, there was the administration was adamant that they were going to have in-person instruction and that they wanted to give parents an option. And he did not sway from that. Now, I think, you know, this whole thing about a special session and whatever, which was an interesting comment to make. As of right now, I think there's been conversations in D.C. about having the CDC provide guidance. I mean, obviously, guidance is different than a mandate. So I'm not quite sure what exactly they're thinking that the federal government might do that would require legislative response. I mean, and so far, you see most school districts around the state are sort of listening to the governor, and they're. I mean, I think most of them are saying mask wearing is going to be optional. And so I think the situation is that I don't think the governor is going to sway. I do want to put one point of emphasis on this that I think is important to remember is that the talk about the vaccines and everything like that. I think what's interesting to remember is that earlier this year, the governor was quite aggressive on promoting vaccines, as we all know. And in fact, he came under some criticism of how the rollout of the vaccines was happening and who was getting them and where they were emphasizing it. But I don't think anyone would disagree that for the first few months of the year, there very much was a constant messaging. That has kind of died away over the last 2 months. And then we've seen sort of like more of the outward criticisms of Fauci that have occurred through the governor's campaign and through his speeches and things of that nature. So that to me is the interesting dichotomy is the fact that you can't deny that the governor was promoting vaccines heavily now until this week, not so much. And it would, you know, he made the comment like vaccines save lives and what have you. And you do see a contrast between what Governor DeSantis is doing and what some other governors are doing, like Governor Hutchinson in Arkansas, where, you know, they have a lower vaccination rate than Florida. But mm-hmm. The point is, you've got other governors who are saying, no, I need to do more to try to promote this. I believe
the governor of Alabama came out today and said it's time to blame unvaccinated people, where, you know, Alabama has a terrible problem with COVID right now, too.
Right. I'm trying to figure out the way things have been moving here and mm-hmm. what have you. And the question is, should the state be doing more? They had some conversation that they said they were going to start airing PSAs on television. I don't believe they've started that yet. Florida has started that yet. And, you know, Florida has not done some of the more dramatic campaigns to try to urge people. Now, I think there's a lot of questions as to whether or not those campaigns have had much of an impact. But, you know, you had Florida A&M University announce this week, that's here in Tallahassee, that they were going to start using CARES Act money to pay students and staff rewards if they got vaccinated. Now, as you know, under Florida law, you can't mandate anyone to be vaccinated. You can't mandate that they provide proof. So, but it's interesting, you have a state university is going to say, no, we're going to use our federal money to try to, you know, get our vaccination rate higher.
That's interesting. We'll follow that. In the meantime, lots of calls coming into the Florida Roundup as we speak with Gary Fineout of Politico. 305-995-1800. Cindy in Lakewood Ranch, Florida is on the line. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. How are you this afternoon?
I'm well. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Well, I totally disagree with Governor DeSantis. And I think apropos of what the last speaker said, that he seems to be flip-flopping in his positions, just really displays his political motivations. And I think the flip-flopping absolutely screams at this truth. But what I did want to say is to invoke two truths that all of us have grown up with. One is that sometimes tough love is necessary to, invoke a positive end. And the second truth is each of the decisions that any of us makes comes with it a consequence. The consequence that people who are not being vaccinated are having is that they're ending up ill in the hospital and perhaps dying. That's the consequence. I would like to, proffer this idea that people who are not vaccinated do face a consequence, and it is that the federal government that pays out Medicare and Medicaid benefits should charge a higher deductible or maybe even refuse to pay for the hospitalization and any of the health issues that are incurred by the people who refuse to be vaccinated. Again, invoking the truth, every single decision we make, results in a consequence. For instance, when we live in Florida, we know there are hurricanes, and we have to buy, homeowners insurance. Well, we pay more than the people in Vermont. That's because we live in Florida. We've decided to. We pay higher premiums, and we pay higher deductibles.
Cindy,
that's our consequence.
Cindy, I have seen a lot of that kind of discussion lately, particularly on social media. There is a lot of frustration about unvaccinated people, and I appreciate your call. We have another point of view. We'll go to another call in a moment here on the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. It's Charles in Orlando. He's on the line, too. Hi, Charles. Go ahead.
Hi. I heard yesterday a report that the Attorney General of the state announced that a positive test for COVID, even though having been vaccinated, and one of the prior doctor guests said that I think it was 5% or less of the patients coming in now with COVID are unvaccinated people. So it seems like people are free to take their chances and decide not to get vaccinated and possibly suffer the consequence, as the last caller mentioned. And yet we just can't live with that. That's not acceptable that people want to take their chances and maybe get sick and all. I understand that some of these people are then saying, oh, save me, but it seems like it's crazy. The federal government announced yesterday that they're going to push a $100 million campaign for rural areas of America to encourage them to be vaccinated. I don't know why we just can't let people do what they want to do. If they don't want to get vaccinated, they want to take their chances. Isn't that fine? Let them take their chances. It's not really a problem. And it doesn't seem to me like people need to be told to get out of their house when it's on fire. So people that aren't getting vaccinated aren't feeling a threat, aren't seeing it as a real crisis that they need to avoid with a vaccination. And what's the problem? Like, if they find that it's a problem, they'll wear masks, they'll get a vaccination, they'll stay inside, whatever it takes. But until they see that, we're going to have to spend $100 million and push them with laws and, advertising campaigns and propaganda to get them to do something they don't want to do. For what? To save their own skin? It just doesn't make any sense.
All right, Charles. Thanks for your thoughts. Gary Fineout, of course, there is a full court press among healthcare professionals to get vaccination rates up. Herd immunity is slipping out of reach because there is so much misinformation about the safety and effectiveness of the vaccines that are free and available. But here's the thing. The longer we go without a highly vaccinated population, the longer this pandemic's going to be with us. And the strain on healthcare systems is just going to continue. And, Gary, it's not just COVID. If an ICU is full of COVID patients, that means car crash victims, someone having a heart attack, someone needing some other kind of surgery, they're not going to get the best care because the hospital is overwhelmed with COVID patients. So the argument for vaccination is larger than just it will save your life. It will improve the health of the entire community, if you're vaccinated. That's the argument, certainly, that doctors are trying to get through to people, Gary.
Well, I think if you recall in the early days of the pandemic, that was the great fear. The fear was that hospitals and healthcare providers were going to be dramatically overwhelmed. And we are certainly seeing admissions climbing in the state of Florida. And you've already seen some hospitals are responding. Because of the vaccination, the people who have been vaccinated, you have the response from the administration and other people is like, well, it's not like it was before. We didn't have a vaccine before. There was a real fear that the ICUs would be completely overwhelmed. But that said, you are seeing some facilities around the state. I mean, well, I guess Jackson earlier this week in Miami announced that they were going to start limiting visitations. You have some facilities that are discussing putting some limits again on selective surgery and things of that nature because they're concerned. So yes, if the cases continue to go up and you have more and more people who are hospitalized as a result of this variant because they haven't got vaccinated, yes, I mean, there will be some pressure. But I think it's also important to remember that, as a result of the pandemic and what have you, that a lot of this is much more in the hands of state government now. I mean, basically, there was a law that was passed in response to everything that happened that basically said that if a local government declares a public health emergency and it decides to put in some restrictions and ordinances and things of that nature, the governor has the veto power to if he comes in and he feels that that is an unreasonable restriction of rights. So you've concentrated some more power in state government
in state
terms of
government
how this responses.
And we will continue to follow the impact of that. Always good to get your insights. Gary Fineout, covering Florida government for Politico. Gary, thanks so much.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
And in a moment, fish kills along the Florida coast and a flare-up of red tide. That's next. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for being with us this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Tom Hudson is out this week. Well, fish have been washing up along Tampa Bay's shoreline for more than a month now. Officials in Pinellas County estimate they have collected more than 1,300 tons of dead sea life from the bay. Now, the culprit behind the mass kills is a bloom of red tide. It's a naturally occurring toxic algae. Red tide can cause respiratory irritation in people, but to fish and other marine life, it can be fatal. The Gulf Coast usually sees this red tide bloom at least once a year, but this bloom is a bit unusual. It's really persistent, and the early timing of it has caused concern among Gulf Coast residents and environmental groups. Many have asked the governor to issue a declaration of emergency to help the region combat red tide. Earlier this week, Governor DeSantis said the state will offer support to affected communities, but he's not going to issue an emergency declaration.
Well, we've said to the county and the locals, like, what more do you need? Tell us what you need. We're happy to help with the resources that we have. Right now, the best thing is to get the cleanup quickly. That's what we've been told by every expert.
We're talking about red tide and fish kills. Right now on the Florida Roundup, give us a call, 305-995-1800. Tweet us at Florida Roundup as we welcome Maya Burke, Assistant Director of the Tampa Bay Estuary Program. Hi, Maya.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Good to have you. Also with us, Steve Newborn of WUSF, covering the red tide. Hey, Steve.
Good afternoon, Melissa.
Good to have you both. Maya, let's start with you. Can you explain how red tide is different from blue-green algae blooms that we also tend to see in the warm months?
Well, the scientific difference is that blue-green algae is a cyanobacteria and red tide, Karenia brevis, is a dinoflagellate. So these are things that are part, red tide's part of the ecosystem in the Gulf of Mexico, but we do know that they are not picky eaters. They can make a lot of quick work out of nutrients from a variety of different sources, and that's what we're kind of experiencing here in the Tampa Bay region now.
And there is a bit more concern than usual about what we're seeing this season. Can you explain why?
There is. In the intro, you mentioned the early timing of this bloom. But one of the other things that's really notable about this bloom is that it's not just occurring in the Gulf of Mexico along our barrier island beaches, but it actually made its way very far up into the upper reaches of Hillsborough Bay and Tampa Bay. And the last time we really saw anything like that was in 1971. And I think that it's kind of notable to understand that in 1971, that's before we had the wastewater treatment laws that we have in place now, before we had the stormwater management treatment laws that we have now. So we were seeing significant nutrient loads to the bay. And, so what we saw 50 years ago is really more in line with what we saw this year. And it's just not common to see red tide at bloom levels up in that far into Tampa Bay.
And do you attribute this to climate change, or maybe a breach at the Piney Point phosphate plant? Millions of gallons of toxic water went into Tampa Bay. Could that be driving part of this?
Yes, we do think that's an important piece of it, but the story is never as simple, I guess, as folks would hope. We do know that there was this patchy bloom of red tide that was occurring to our south, and we had some somewhat uncommon wind patterns that were pushing some of those Karenia brevis cells northward and towards Tampa Bay. We also had a really dry spring, and so we saw very high salinity levels in Tampa Bay that aren't really typical for what we would see. And red tide, Karenia brevis, really does do better in those salty kind of conditions. So those things also played a part. But by the time that the red tide made it into Tampa Bay, it began to interact with the nutrient-laden water that came from the Piney Point spill. And that's 200 tons of nitrogen into lower Tampa Bay that we wouldn't typically see. That's about a year's worth of nitrogen delivered to that bay segment over the course of 10 days. So we do think that is part of what caused this bloom to be so intense, unlike anything we'd seen for the past 50 years.
Mm. We're talking about 1,300 tons of dead marine life, just a massive fish kill. Steve Newborn of WUSF, local officials, environmental groups are begging the governor to declare a state of emergency. He has declined to do so. Could an emergency declaration help in the response?
Right. The governor was here just a couple of days ago, and he had been getting letters from various business and environmental groups, as well as from the city of St. Petersburg and Pinellas County, to declare a state of emergency. Now, what the governor has said was, we don't have that situation anymore where we need to actually declare a state of emergency to free up these funds. The last time we had a major red tide outbreak was in 2018, before a special fund was set up. Once Governor DeSantis came into office, they set up this dedicated pot of money to fight red tide and blue-green algae outbreaks. And so he says there's no need to do that. The money is there, and he said that they've already allocated more than $2 million of this towards a cleanup effort. So there's no need to have a state of emergency. It wouldn't really do anything.
Let's go to Chris in Orlando. He's calling into the show. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hi. Good afternoon. I was listening to the show, and I just kind of, I see a direct correlation between the red algae, what's causing the red algae issues, and every other social issue we seem to experience here in Florida, whether it's our buildings falling down, or it's our unemployment, or it's the pandemic. It all leads back to a political doctrine of deregulate, defund, obstruct, and outsource everything. And I see that as the cause of this red tide. Well, maybe the cause, but why we're not getting it under control. And the same reason that our buildings are falling down and our unemployment system doesn't work and our pandemic is out of control. It all goes back to deregulating everything, defunding it, and what you can't defund and deregulate, obstruct, and, of course, outsource. So we as citizens of Florida have no redress. We have to suffer this over and over again.
Chris,
I just can't get my mind wrapped around why.
Chris, thank you for the call. Thanks for that, here on the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Okay, Steve Newborn, Chris is expressing frustration with the political leadership of Florida. And certainly all of these issues are connected in the sense that Florida is dealing with a confluence of bad stuff. People will have the opportunity to vote in next year's election. Certainly the governor's opponents will be making the kind of arguments Chris just made.
Yeah, I don't know how much of this you can tie to politics. You know, like Maya said, this has been going on since Spanish explorer times, Red Tide. It's just getting really bad now, probably because of the rampant development that has overtaken much of the state. This is the same problem we're having with our springs becoming, you know, totally green with algae, and the problem we're having with a lot of the Lake Okeechobee, the Coosawhatchie and St. Lucie rivers overflowing with blue-green algae. It's basically a question of overdevelopment and not doing enough about the nutrients. It's we have to put a lid on septic tank usage, and a lot of the cities are also regulating fertilizer use. Here in Tampa Bay, Pinellas, Manatee, Sarasota counties, and the city of Tampa have fertilizer ordinances in place to prevent people from, you know, greening their lawn when you're going to have a lot of rain and it washes into the bay. So it's a kind of a bigger problem than just politics. We have to be aware of the problem, and kind of everybody has to do their part to, you know, maybe not, you know, fertilize their lawn so much, and maybe some kind of building regulations in place. That's a tough haul for anybody. So
sure.
Good luck to any politician.
I know it. So Maya Burke, what would be the most effective way then to deal with this? As Steve pointed out, there are a number of ways to attack this problem.
Yeah, so I think the caller brings up a couple of points that are important. You know, there's only so far that public-private partnerships and the coordinating efforts of things like the National Estuary Programs, where I work, can do. I think we can get pretty far and we can do a lot to protect our waterways, but there is an important role for regulation to play there too. You know, Tampa Bay was declared dead once before, and the answer, what sort of was the tipping point to bring us back, was the passage of legislation that required more stringent wastewater treatment standards to wastewater treatment plants that discharge to Tampa Bay. So the Wilson Grizzle Act and subsequent Grizzle Fig Act. So regulation and legislation is an important sort of jump start to these things. And what we saw at Piney Point, you know, is an example of a facility that, you know, the regulation obviously wasn't sufficient to address that risk that was sitting there on the edge of Tampa Bay. And the other piece of it is, you know, if we value our waterways and we want to tackle all of those nutrient sources that Steve was mentioning, it requires a financial commitment from our elected officials. And it's important that we continue to invest in modern treatment systems for our stormwater, for our wastewater, from all sources. And so I think there's a role for all of it, individual and from a community perspective as well.
Yeah. And we will continue to follow it because, you know, we're not seeing red tide on my side of Florida, Maya and Steve, but that's not to say it couldn't eventually make its way around the peninsula. I want to thank you both. Maya Burke, Assistant Director of the Tampa Bay Estuary Program with us, and Steve Newborn covering the fish kills and the red tide in the Tampa Bay area with WUSF. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks, Melissa.
And that's our show for today. The Florida Roundup comes to you from WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Andrea Podormo and Heather Schatz are producers, with engineering help from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Josh Torres. Richard Ives answers the phones. Peter Mayers is WLRN's Director of Radio Operations and our Technical Director. Our theme music provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. I'm Melissa Ross. Have a great weekend, everyone. Stay safe out there.